Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Welcome, listeners, to the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, broadcasting from the San Diego Performance Academy. We lead off today with a story for local sports fans following Jimmy Johnson's big win as he races to make history as one of the most winning athletes ever. We've also got a troubling story about the City of San Diego's plan to drain down Lake Morena, a popular recreation area in East County, over the objections of the County Parks and Recreation Department and Supervisor Diane Jacob. Plus, we've got word on a drone crash into a Navy ship off our shore that's heightened concerns about drone testing in East County. The Sheriff's Department brings you a warning about how to prevent stalkers from finding your children or you using GPS tags on your cell phone. We have a health report today on new guidelines for statin drugs prescribed to reduce cholesterol. Plus, we've got information for families in need on how to apply for help this holiday season through the East County Toy and Food Drive. Bookshelf host Raina Menashe interviews author Peggy Lane, and we have much more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. East County's own Jimmy Johnson zoomed into sports history Sunday night, winning his sixth Sprint Cup championship to become one of the top NASCAR racing competitors ever. He trails only Richard Petty and the late Dale Earnhardt, racing legends who each scored seven wins. Sporting News writer Jeff Owens now names Johnson among the greatest athletes of all time in any sport. The win ties Johnson with LeBron James of NBA fame as the two most dominant pro athletes in pro sports today, each with six titles in 8 years, surpassing basketball's Kobe Bryant and baseball's Derek Jeter. Owens writes that Johnson rivals golf's Tiger Woods and tennis star Roger Federer as the most accomplished individual athletes in pro sports. But while Woods has won 14 golf majors and Federer 17 Grand Slams in tennis, Johnson has now won all of NASCAR's biggest races, most of them several times. These include the Daytona 500, Brickyard 500, Coca-Cola 600, the Southern 500, and the Sprint All-Star Race. Collectively, that's 15 wins as Johnson races on into the record books. Johnson tweeted victory photos, including one of himself wearing a championship hat in the winner's circle. After his victory, he shouted to the crowd, "I hear you up there," waving to his wife, Chandra, and his young daughter, Genevieve. He later recalled his grandmother, who died a few months ago, saying, "I know my grandma was guiding me around the track." Johnson grew up in El Cajon and Santee, but he's never forgotten his roots. To many here, he's a hometown hero in more than one respect, having donated millions of dollars through his foundation to support local schools right here in East County. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The City of San Diego wants to drain down Lake Morena in East County starting December 1st. The city wants the water from the reservoir to meet its needs. Unless the county agrees to fork over $1.7 million, San Diego's interim mayor, Todd Gloria, has announced his approval of plans for the City of San Diego to drain down Lake Morena to 2,967 feet and transfer that water to Barrett and Otay Lakes. His decision ignores warnings from Supervisor Diane Jacob and a report by County Parks and Recreation staff, which says that such action could have negative impacts on public safety, the environment, recreation, and the local economy. In a letter to Interim Mayor Gloria on September 30th, Diane Jacob wrote, "I can't emphasize enough that jeopardizing public safety, the environment, and recreational opportunities in turn for a one-time cash savings is the imprudent thing to do." Supervisor Jacob opposes the drawdown and notes that the lake is used by firefighters to battle wildfires. She asks that any drawdown be delayed until January. Further, she asked that the city consider a compromise of not allowing the water level to fall below 2,980 feet. That's 13 feet higher than what the city proposes. And the city has already drained water levels 4 feet down from earlier this year. She also asked the city to first notify stakeholders, including businesses and residents, who might be impacted by the drawdown plans. Now, the County Parks and Recreation Report has warned that the drawdown could cause massive fish kills, algae blooms, and leave Lakeview cabins without waterfront views. The lake is a popular spot for fishing, boating, camping, and hiking. Lake Morena drew 1,600 overnight campers last year that were residents of the city of San Diego alone, and the lake served an estimated 10,000 visitors overall. But Todd Gloria, in a letter dated October 14th, informed Supervisor Jacob that the city intends to go ahead with the massive drawdown to efficiently utilize local water supply resources and reduce the purchase of expensive imported water. He said the city's plan would leave 113 acres of water surface area for recreational areas, which is about the size of the San Diego Zoo. To limit the drawdown to the level requested by Supervisor Jacob, the city of San Diego would have to purchase extra imported water, Gloria stated, and he made clear that the city is not going to foot that bill. Instead, he proposed that the county purchase from the city 2,128 acre-feet of water at a cost of $1.7 million if the county wants to keep the lake at the level that Jacob proposed. East County Magazine has asked Supervisor Jacob's office if such an offer would be considered, and also to what extent such costs might be offset by recreational user fees that will be lost if the lake becomes undesirable to campers, fishermen, and other recreational visitors. Also of interest is whether the city of San Diego should compensate the county for the lost recreational revenues. Gloria claims the city will continue to notify key stakeholders of future water transfers, and this one, but he only cited the Cleveland National Forest, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the International Boundary and Water Commission. No mention was made by Gloria about notifying the actual residents or businesses impacted by the proposal, as Supervisor Jacob had requested be done.
Hello, I'm Sergeant Mark Vernon with the Sheriff's Department, assigned to the CATCH team, which investigates high technology and internet crimes. Families love posting photos on Facebook, Twitter, and Flickr, and other social media sites to show their family and friends what they've been up to. But did you know these snapshots could be revealing a lot more than you think, and exposing you and your family to serious danger? When you take a photo with your cell phone, you could be giving away your most personal location information through geotagging. It's when a GPS-enabled smartphone saves the location of where you took the photo. It's basically broadcasting your location at any given point in time. With the right software, the geomarkers embedded in the photos you post online can tell a pedophile, stalker, or burglar exactly where you took the photos, right down to the sideline of the field or the bedroom in your home. That means criminals can pinpoint the exact spot of your child on a playground, where you live, and where you hang out. Burglars can also monitor your postings and activities to find out where you go and when you aren't home. They can then use that information to plan a kidnapping, break-in, or other crime. So what can you do about it? It's easy. Just turn off the GPS feature for photos on your phone. It won't affect any of the other GPS applications such as maps, web search, or lost phone tracking. Here's how you turn off the photo GPS on an iPhone. Just go to the settings, then hit privacy, then location services. There you can turn off camera tracking as well as any other apps you don't want tracked. The process for an Android phone varies, so please ask your phone provider for assistance. And remember, be careful what you post online. If you want to report internet crimes, call 858-565-5200.
A malfunctioning drone has struck the USS Chancellorsville on Saturday night off the Southern California coast near Point Magoo, the Navy announced. Two sailors sustained minor burns. The guided missile cruiser ship will return to San Diego for an assessment of damages. The Navy did not reveal what type of drone went awry. The accident heightens concerns, however, among East County residents who have already voiced alarm over a proposal to test drones, or unmanned aerial vehicles, over San Diego's backcountry. Now we have Dave Patterson with Veterans for Peace on the phone. Dave, what is your reaction to news that a drone has crashed into a San Diego-based Navy ship this weekend during a training exercise?
Well, it sounds like they need to do a little bit more research. They're crashing drones into our own ships. What are they actually trying to do with them? Of course, they won't tell us that, but it seems like the technology hasn't really caught up with the ideas yet.
Does this heighten your concerns about the proposed testing of drones over the backcountry here in East County?
Most certainly. You know, they're talking about just opening the skies to all these drones for testing, and they could be run by, you know, drones from some mom-and-pop shop or somebody like Northrop Grumman or General Atomics. These things will be flying all over the place, apparently. And I just read a report about how there's this huge, like, $2.7 billion worth of property that could burn up, has a very high probability of burning up in the next wildfire. So I'm kind of wondering, and we're wondering, who's going to pay for this liability insurance? The county? If the county supervisors sign on to this, which they already did, does that mean that the county is liable for a drone crash that burns the whole county down?
Now, for listeners who may not be up on this, all five county supervisors, along with all five congressional representatives for San Diego, have signed a letter in support of drone testing that was sent to the federal government, which will be deciding by the end of this year whether San Diego will be chosen as an official drone testing region. Now, Dave, I understand there's an event coming up in December, December 4th, organized by Backcountry Voices, for residents of East County and San Diego who want to learn more about this proposal. Can you give us some information on that, please?
Yes, a bunch of people in Julian who have been nice enough to let me join them are setting up a hearing about drones in Julian. We're going to get up there, and we got somebody from the ACLU coming and a few other experts. And we already invited Diane Jacob to come to the first one we did in Julian. But, you know, funny thing is she wrote back and said that, just because of budget cuts, we can't send anybody up there. But the same day...
Wait a minute. Because of budget cuts, they can't send somebody to a town hall hearing about concerned residents in Julian?
Apparently, that's what she says. And it's funny because the same day I read about them giving $50,000 to the Ramona Girls Softball League.
Yeah.
Well, no, maybe their priorities aren't too good.
Well, that's an interesting point. Thank you very much for sharing your concerns with us. And can you tell us the time and the exact location of that December 4th meeting on drones in the backcountry for listeners who may wish to attend and learn more?
Well, it's at the town hall right there in the middle of Julian.
And that's at 6 o'clock p.m. And will they be addressing both positive and negative potential uses of drones at this, Dave? Or is this more on the side of those that are concerned?
Well, actually, at the last one, we talked about some of the positive uses. This technology does have good applications. But, you know, this whole thing's taken on a little bit of a Samson and Goliath side here. The County Board of Supervisors and all the people downtown in the city, they want to create jobs, you know, at the big defense contractors and the drone industry. And in the meantime, it appears that they're just, like, putting the rest of the county at risk of wildfires. And here's the question I have for them, for the supervisors. You want to create jobs. What are we going to do for jobs if all of Ramona burns to the ground? Where are the people going to work? Where are they going to live? Because some drone crashed. That's what they need to think about.
That's an important question, Dave, and we will certainly help to get the word out and ask the question in the right places, and we appreciate you taking the time to be on our show today. Help brighten the holidays for families in need, the Salvation Army in El Cajon will be holding the 38th annual East County Toy and Food Drive this year. If your family needs help with food or gifts for your children this holiday season, you can apply for help by filling out an application on Saturday, November 23rd, or on Saturday, December 7th, from 9 a.m. to noon and from 1:30 to 3 o'clock at the Salvation Army offices. The offices are located at 1011 East Main Street in El Cajon. The toys are for children ages 12 and under. Space is limited, and you must appear in person to apply. No applications will be completed without all verifications requested. To get details, call 619-440-4683, extension 401. You, your group, or your organization are welcome to drop off donations to the Salvation Army location as well.
This is Leon Thompson with the East County Magazine Health Report.
Millions of Americans suffer from high cholesterol. Cholesterol itself is essential for all human and animal life. However, high levels of cholesterol are strongly associated with arteriosclerosis, hardening of the arteries, and coronary heart disease. Animal fats and carbohydrates play roles in total blood cholesterol levels. These functions take place mainly in the liver, where a balance between LDL and HDL, the two kinds of cholesterol, are maintained. Cholesterol for some is in the genes, but it can be changed by food choice, body build, and medications. The primary medication used to lower cholesterol is a class of drugs called statins. Statins are used to treat or prevent cardiovascular disease. Tuesday, the American Heart Association released new guidelines for the use of cholesterol-lowering drugs, specifically statins. The new guidelines place less emphasis on lowering cholesterol to target levels and essentially ease the use of statins to enable more patients to take the drugs. But are they really safe and effective for people not already suffering dangerously high levels of cholesterol? Biochemists and researchers are working to find new and more effective ways for reducing the risk of cardiovascular disease. Canadian researcher Dr. Jean-Claude Tardif said, "Even the most powerful statins have not cured the disease. And furthermore, what about the millions for whom statins are not effective, or the millions who are allergic to or cannot tolerate them?" The new guidelines may sound like good news for patients eager to lower their cholesterol, but there are serious doubts over whether statins actually offer meaningful protection from our number one killer, heart disease, or if they help people live longer or better lives. Statins also have severe side effects. Statins are effective for people with known heart disease, but for people who have less than a 20% risk of getting heart disease in the next 10 years, statins not only fail to reduce the risk of death, but also fail even to reduce the risk of serious illness. At the same time, 18% or more of this group would experience side effects, including muscle pain or weakness, decreased cognitive function, and increased risk of diabetes, especially for women, cataracts, or sexual dysfunction. Perhaps more dangerous, statins provide false reassurances that may discourage patients from taking the steps that actually reduce cardiovascular disease. According to the World Health Organization, 80% of cardiovascular disease is caused by smoking, lack of exercise, an unhealthy diet, and other lifestyle factors. Statins give the illusion of protection to many people who may be much better served, by example, by simply walking an extra 10 minutes per day.
There's a push in Washington to get more California children into preschool. The Strong Start for America's Children Act would expand critical access to high-quality early learning programs for children from birth through age 5. Celia Ayala with Los Angeles Universal Preschool says the bipartisan bill would expand and improve the quality of early care and education for children in California and across the nation.
It is imperative that socially, emotionally, and cognitively children be provided with the appropriate preparation to enter kindergarten.
The legislation builds on President Obama's Preschool for All proposal announced in his State of the Union address. The bill would help states fund preschool for all four-year-olds of low-income families, as well as expand early learning opportunities for kids from birth to age 5. Ayala says the first few years of a child's life are critical to his or her future success.
We know the importance in terms of the articulation and transition from birth to 5 years old and the importance of the learning that happens in the investment that is taking place in the future payoffs.
The bill is authored by Iowa Senator Tom Harkin, California Representative George Miller, and New York Representative Richard Hanna. Children's advocate and actress Jennifer Gardner also helped launch the legislation on Capitol Hill on Wednesday. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
Disaster preparedness is vital, but it can be tough if you're disabled. The county has come up with a training template for home caregivers, residential care facilities, or anybody who works with the disabled. The new 30-page training template is designed to be completed with the help of a home care provider and can be tailored to the specific needs of the individual.
The plan lays out a realistic 16-week calendar of actions Preparing for disasters seems pretty overwhelming. This breaks it down into 16 weeks and talks about really simple, specific things you can do week by week so that at the end, you're very prepared.
Supervisor Dave Roberts introduced the new program, and here's what he had to say.
The Office of Emergency Services and the County of San Diego are committed to make sure everybody has the ability to evacuate during emergencies. And today we're launching a new application on our website where folks can actually download a plan for people that have special needs to be able to get out and safely get to where they need to go to.
To learn more, go to ReadySanDiego.org. In the County News Center, I'm Michael Russo.
This is Leon Thompson.
And this is Miriam Raftery bringing you this week's local government report.
Lemon Grove City Council on Tuesday will consider two resolutions that would allow Lemon Grove property owners to participate in the Fig Tree PACE program. This program provides a financial tool for homeowners to install energy-efficient improvements to their homes, such as solar energy. Lemon Grove's council will also consider a resolution that authorizes the city to join as a partner in San Diego County's Live Well San Diego initiative.
San Miguel Fire District's board will hold a special meeting on Wednesday, November 20th at 5:30 p.m. in the Crest Community Clubhouse located at 113 North Park Drive in the El Cajon community of Crest. The meeting was called in response to a request from a resident, and the goal is to better understand community concerns, said Leonard Villarreal, Public Information Officer for the district.
Padre Dam Municipal Water District's board also meets on Wednesday. The board will hear a presentation by the County Water Authority on our region's water supply. Board members will also consider raising their per diem pay from $117 to $128 per day.
Some good news for local veterans. During November, veterans and active duty military personnel can adopt a dog or a cat at half price through County Animal Services. This includes spaying or neutering, vaccinations, a microchip, and a free health examination. The adoptions are limited to one dog or two cats per household. Don Danielson, director of the county's Department of Animal Services, says this is a win-win situation for both pets and vets. The pets get a loving home, and service members will gain a loyal forever companion. Pets can often have healing effects on veterans and help them transition back into their civilian lives, she added. The county animal shelters are located in Bonita, San Diego, and Carlsbad. In addition to 50% off adoption fees at county shelters, a free one-year dog license is also available to veterans who live in the unincorporated areas of the county or in certain cities, including Santee, San Diego, and several coastal communities. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
For the past 8 years, the Alpine Women's Club has sponsored its Christmas in Alpine home tour. However, this year, the group has only one house for its tour and is seeking additional homes to showcase in Alpine. The fundraiser helps to provide scholarships that the club gives away each year. Since 1950, the Alpine Women's Club has given away more than $95,000 to exceptional Alpine graduating seniors, said Carla Anderson, president of the Alpine Women's Club. She added, "We are reaching out to the community and looking for Alpine residents who love to decorate for the holidays and would enjoy sharing their decorating skills with others." The event is scheduled for Saturday, December 14th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. If you are interested in being part of this festive event, you will also be invited to the club's Christmas party starting at 3 p.m. at the Alpine Women's Club located in historic Town Hall building. There will be food, refreshments, and surprises. For more information, contact Carlette Anderson at 445-2055 extension 11 or email the Alpine Women's Club at AOL.com.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing award-winning author and East County native, Peggy Lang. My guest writes, ghostwrites, and or edits most anything from web copy to general nonfiction to memoirs, novels, and screenplays. Welcome, Peggy. It's a pleasure talking with you.
It's great to be here.
Let's begin with your most recent book, Assassin's Game, which was co-authored with Governor Dan Walker, and it won Best Action Suspense Thriller at this year's San Diego Book Awards. What was that project like for you, and how did you come to collaborate with the governor?
We had collaborated on his memoirs earlier, The Maverick and the Machine. He was a rebellious governor in rebelling against the Chicago machine politics under the Daley administration. And so we did that book together, which also won an award. And then he came up with this fiction idea and asked me to critique it. And I said, well, here's what you should do. And he said, well, I don't want to do that. How about if you do it? So eventually we went back and forth and decided to collaborate on it.
And so did you enjoy that process? Was it different collaborating with a governor versus another writer?
It was different collaborating with the governor. I absolutely love Dan. He's a dear, dear friend. But he has this gubernatorial authority about him that I found it a little bit difficult to work around. Yeah,
but you worked through it.
We do, and we still have arguments, but oh well, we get through, and we understand that that's part of our process, so it's okay.
Great. Well, I know that you've ghost-authored and ghost-co-authored quite a few other books, including an award-winning memoir in 2007, and more recently a novel called Hearts on the Line. I've talked about this before in here, but what is your experience as a quote-unquote ghost, and is it something that has added to your writing and editing skills? I mean, what's ghosting like for you?
I love ghosting.
Really?
Yes, I do. As a writer, we are very isolated and spend enormous amounts of time alone, concentrating in front of a computer. And so one could easily just turn into a little hermit type of a person. And so for me, being a ghostwriter is a chance to collaborate with a number of different people. And I've mm-hmm. gotten very, very close to the people I collaborate mm-hmm. with. And it's enriched my life. It has stretched me as a writer enormously.
Really?
I feel like I can just about take on anything at this point because I've done so many different types of things. I find it very worthwhile. I am ready to get into my own stuff, though.
Sure.
I think I'm sort of veering in that direction a little bit.
Is it at all difficult to not have your name on the work that you've done, or is that just part of the...
You know, it was something I had to get over on that memoir that I mentioned with the governor. Mm-hmm. We sold it to SIU Press, and I had it in my contract, Southern Illinois University Press, and I had it in my contract that I was going to have a byline on the cover. And the editor said, well, I can't sell this book with your name on it. Everybody will think you wrote it. And he said, listen, editors get shafted all the time. And I was more than an editor. I was truly a co-author. But
right.
Okie dokie then. I would never get in the way of a project. So I just decided I can do this. I can just I can just be in the background and that's okay. You know, Colin Powell said, it's amazing what you can get done as long as you don't have to take credit for everything. And so I thought...
That's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah, so and that's been true for me. I've gotten so many projects now that since I don't have to have my name on it.
Yeah, so there are so many riches that it compensates for the...
Absolutely. For me, it does.
Well, I know you're an active member of the writing community. You teach at UCSD, the La Jolla Writers Conference, and other places. What is it about teaching that draws you as opposed to the writing, ghostwriting? Would you call it just more stable work, or is it another labor of love?
It's a little bit of both. I rely on the classes at UCSD Extension to pay my property taxes, for example. But I love the process. Sometimes it leads to collaborations. Other times it leads to people that I bring into the writers groups that I'm in. Teaching has also caused me to be very focused on what I'm trying to get across,
right,
which forces me to understand it better and which enables me to use it better than when I'm writing. So it's kind of a win-win process.
So listening to you, I see it's all an interconnected web, really.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and I love being around writers. I don't know, there's something about people who write, and it's like a wanting to communicate with your fellow human being in a heightened kind of way. Mm-hmm. And I just find that exciting.
Great. So what's your most exciting project? And
a past exciting project was getting to work on this rock opera. I had never done anything like that. I had worked on screenplays, but... never a rock opera. I was working with some very brilliant musicians, but they didn't quite have their story. Well, we worked on the script, and they didn't understand how to dramatize the things they were trying to get across from their music. And so we helped them with that. That was a very exciting and fun project.
So where is that rock opera? Is it being produced somewhere? Or
you know, they had produced it in another country, and then they were in a different language, actually.
Right. Well, then one last question, Peggy. What are you working on now with your name? And could you share a little bit about your routine or your writing process? I mean, what works best for you when you either have a deadline or give yourself a deadline?
I like deadlines, and I often have to give myself deadlines. That's a big part. But basically, I write every single day, almost. At least, and maybe not all day, but for some of the day. And so I have to get some exercise in, otherwise my brain atrophies. I'm excited right now. One of my writing partners, Marla Martinson, who did the Hearts on the Line, I did that with her as a ghost. We are now writing with my name on it on a partnership basis, a screenplay, which we just got a manager for, which is similar to an agent,
right,
who plans to market it as a pilot for a TV series.
Oh, how exciting.
And so I am excited about that. That feels fun. And I have another book with the governor on corruption, and then I have a book that I'm doing on leadership, which takes the standpoint that what if the soul is the most important element of leadership, and it's for the Hansen Foundation, who has brought in some 33 women peacemakers to San Diego, USD, the Joan Kroc Center for Peace and Justice. And so I'm mostly writing up their stories, but from this particular slant, because these are amazingly dedicated, beautiful, spirited women, and it's really exciting and a pleasure to write about them.
It sounds like a good time for that.
Yeah.
In the world.
What the world needs now.
Yes. Well, Peggy, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Raina. It's been a pleasure.
For more information on Peggy Lang, please visit our website at www.peggylang.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is Janice Mork, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world. This is Janice Mork. I'm here with Kathy Placid,
the founder and executive director of the Rocking Horse Ranch in El Cajon. Kathy, can you tell us what's special about the ranch?
The ranch is a real amazing place where we bring in animals, mostly horses, that have been rescued from just any kind of hard life situation, whether it's abuse, neglect. Many of them were sent to slaughter yards, and we pair them up with people who are going through hard life situations as well, or recovering from those, whether it's abuse of their own, foster kids, kids with parents in prison, relationship issues. And it's just a really safe, down-to-earth environment where everybody helps everybody, and there's a lot of healing that occurs in that place.
And I understand that one way that you do healing is through equestrian therapy. Can you explain more how that works?
Sure. Equine-assisted growth and learning programs, or equine-assisted psychotherapy, are simply a way to use horses, which are live, large, amazing creatures that mirror and work together with people to help identify in a real experiential way issues that we struggle with in life. And so by working with the horses, people learn boundaries, people learn communication, respect, trust. All sorts of different issues can be addressed in an experiential format where then you can take that and apply that over to real life situations. So, for example, people in a classroom setting learn a lot by hearing, by watching, but you learn more by actually doing. And the same thing applies to mental health and life situations.
And how long has the ranch been in business?
Oh, goodness. The ranch, I founded the ranch, and it's kind of been a process. I started doing work with horses and people probably 25 years ago. I started with a girl who was blind and was struggling, and paired her up with a horse, and she learned a lot of self-confidence and gave herself permission to try things that she thought were difficult. The ranch as it stands now was actually incorporated as a nonprofit, as a 501c3, about 7 years ago.
Where are the abused kids found?
Oh, goodness. We get kids from all over San Diego County, mostly through referrals, whether it's county agencies, foster programs, group homes. We have churches and schools, individual therapists, some of the Indian reservations. But it's all just through people that have been out to the ranch, seen our programs work, and it does work. And so there's just a lot of word of mouth, and people just get sent out there.
What kind of challenges does the ranch face right now?
We are currently on 2.5 acres, which we are leasing, and that property is up for sale. And so what we're trying to do is raise funds, both monthly donations, pledges from people for the next year, to help support us being able to purchase the property so that the ranch will actually own it and we won't be in jeopardy of having to close our doors.
How do the kids first feel when they see the horses?
You know what? It's kids and adults. It's funny. And sometimes the kids actually are easier with the horses than the adults. Some of them have never even seen a horse before. And so they expect them to be very much like something that would be familiar to them, like a dog. They think that, you know, they'll sit or come like a dog would. Some people are intimidated because they are large animals, and if you've never seen one before, you know, a 1,500-pound animal can be scary. But most people warm up to them really fast and find that once, whether they've been around them before or not, once they spend a little bit of time with them, that they're really, really amazing creatures. And people have a lot of fun and tend to open up and feel really safe with them.
Oh, good. And what are your ambitions for the future?
Right now, we probably reach between 400 and 600 people every month. So several, thousands of people every year. And it's incredible. I would love to be able to grow, to be able to reach more. Like I said, we're on only 2.5 acres right now, which works. And we are reaching a lot of people. But once we secure the property and we can actually own it, I would love to either have a second facility where we can offer more programs or move to a larger facility.
Those sound like nice goals. Has the community stepped forward to help?
We've been really blessed so far. We've just started fundraising just these last few weeks. We just found out that the property was going up for sale. And it's really been touching. We've had little kids doing bake sales to raise money for us, empty out their piggy bank and give us their last dollar and 10 cents. We've had donors making pledges from around the world, with Switzerland and France, Canada, Germany, and then just a lot of local people. And again, it's been, you know, anything from large donors who are, you know, pledging $500 a month to people who are pledging $5 a month. And so I think when everybody rallies together and we get a lot of people who support a really amazing program that's going on like this, most everything we do, I don't know if I mentioned it, is outreach. And we do charge for some of our services, but we try and reach people who don't necessarily have the means to pay for services themselves. And I think what the community is seeing is that if they all step up, it helps those people that can't take care of themselves. And so it's been really, really neat to watch how everybody has come together to help with the problem and with the programs.
Oh, very nice. And how long did you have to raise the funds for?
We just got an extension because we've been doing so well. We have through the end of November, so just right before Thanksgiving. So it's urgent in the sense that it's just a few weeks, but I feel like it's attainable if through people like yourselves and letting us have airtime and making people aware that there even is such a program.
What other events does the ranch have coming up?
We're hoping to put together a number of fundraisers. We do an open ranch program on Saturdays. If you go on our website, it's rockinghorseranch.org, O-R-G, and there's an event page on there, and it talks about all of our events, open ranch, where people can come and visit and see the facility. And then hopefully we're going to put together some other upcoming fundraiser events, concerts, trail ride, etc.
Cool. This is Janice Mork. I just talked with Kathy Placid, the founder and executive director of the Rocking Horse Ranch. The story about this ranch is now posted online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks, Janice.
Welcome to Reel to Reel. Every show, we will bring you authentic, independent artists. I'm your host, Dean Bruce, and I sit down every show with a diverse group of musicians, not only digging deep into the grit of the music-making process, but also bringing to you the real stories of these real artists. This is Reel to Reel. Good evening, everyone. I'm your host, Dean Bruce. We're in studio tonight with High Tide. Say hello, everyone.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up?
So we got Blaze, Brian, Ed, Kale, Dave, Garrett, huge band in the studio, one of the biggest ones we've ever had. We're going to get right into it. Why don't you give me an idea of how you guys got started?
Originally, we jammed through some house party kind of influences where, you know, a guy's playing guitar, a guy's playing drums, and it's kind of randomly jammed together. And High Tide's been a fluid entity since the beginning, and we've come around to where we feel like we're poised to make some moves in the scene and stuff like that. We got an SDMA nomination just recently for our last album, so we're
nice.
Feeling good about that. And
The SDMAs are coming up right around the corner, aren't they?
Yeah, next month.
Talk to me about the process that you go through making the music. You know, let's talk about Back for More, for example. How did you guys start that off? Do you do lyrics first and then the music? Do you do the music first, lyrics? And kind of walk me through that process.
It changes from track to track. High Tide's a very collaborative project. It always has been. So we've all kind of brought our influences in. It's very much my influence on that song. And so it's got this upbeat, major, quick guitar riff kind of thing happening. And it's really for my lady, you know, I love her. Shout out to my lady, Mavi.
You talked about Sublime. Obviously a musical influence. What other kind of bands are out there that you really are digging on that you kind of feel like you either draw from or want to be like?
Well, there's a lot of contemporary acts out there that are doing reggae, and they're doing it really well and doing it big, like Slightly Stupid, Revolution, bands like that, Iration. These are bands that really came from a lot of Hawaii vibes and with the California mix too, and we're strictly San Diego, so we like to throw our San Diego spin on everything.
Yeah, on that Revolution note, last year I actually toured with them. I was their backup horn player because their horn player was missing a lot of shows. So I filled in for about 3 months full-time playing sax, and while I was on the road, with those guys, I learned a lot about the business aspect of it, which I kind of brought back to the band here. So that band is very focused, and
they're great guys too.
Yeah, they're great guys, awesome people, positive vibes, but very focused.
So you talk about bringing the business aspect into it, and it's a good point, because making music is one thing. Anybody can get together and throw some people together and produce a song. It may not be a good song, but they can produce the song. But there is a business aspect to it. What do you think that you guys were missing?
Well, I think a big part of it was, prior to going on the road with Evolution, all of our stuff was just recorded amongst friends in, you know, decent studios, good studios, but we didn't have a full-time producer backing us. And when I came back from the road, we had the opportunity to work with Ian Young.
Of Tribal Seeds,
yeah, who's an up-and-coming producer. I mean, a huge producer in the scene right now.
Roots musician, I believe.
Yes, Roots Musician Records.
.com, check that out. They've got a lot of up-and-comers on there. Hyrie, she's nominated for SDMA. Gonzo from Beyond Eyesight records with them. You know, we're going to work continuously with Ian Young for sure. He's a great guy. You know, everybody's just really positive. It's such a positive scene to play reggae. We're really blessed.
Do you think that there's a point at which you stop being artists and you just are going through the motions? You know, you have an A&R guy, you've got a manager, you've got producers, you become a little sheltered, and the vibe, the positiveness of your message starts to dwindle because you're just trying to put music out there and get a paycheck?
Yeah, that can happen for sure. I mean, we're trying not to go that route. We're trying to keep the roots in there. That's why, you know, reggae has roots, and it's really important as reggae artists to not forget your roots. And that's why when I met Eric from Revolution, I was really stoked to see that he's a really down-to-earth guy, you know. And it's good to see that the people we look up to are really good people, and it just helps us to want to be good people as well and really push the music forward, you know, and ride the wave. You know, we're high tide. We want to ride that vibe, you know, every day.
Let's take a few minutes and listen to Eye for an Eye by High Tide.
It's an eye for an eye, yeah.
in studio with High Tide. If I'm looking for you out in the internet, where can I go to find you guys?
Well, if you want to hear us on internet radio, we're on Pandora. We're on Spotify. Just look for High Tide Reggae. We're all over YouTube. Our website is always getting updated. Brian always rocking the website stuff. He's really good with that stuff. HighTideReggae.com. Check us out online and also Facebook.com/SDHighTide. And once again, HighTideReggae.com.
We're going to close out the show tonight with Misled Souls, and you guys are going to rock the house. I appreciate you guys being in tonight, taking the time, you know, spending a few minutes to sit down and talk with me. We've had a great time tonight in studio. High Tide, they definitely rock in the reggae scene with some positive music, positive vibes. And we're going to close it down with Misled Souls.
Keep the company, I'm misled souls. company of mine. No, 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 no. Miss Netso, now keep the company of Miss Netso. So, no, no. Miss Netso, now keep the company of Miss Netso. So, no, 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 no. Miss Netso, now keep the company of Miss Netso. So, no, no. Miss Netso, no company of mine.
To Real is recorded on location at San Diego Performance Academy with help of studio producer Dave Bramley, executive producer Jerry Dean, engineer Levi Wong. If you would like to appear on the show, check us out at www.realtorealsessions.com, facebook.com/realtorealsessions, or you can email us at info@realtorealsessions.com. Title music provided by Look Up Here.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.